deliberately think about it, pay for the score. The primary error was that the district court misapplied the recapture rule as clarified by this court's opinion in the NBO. In the NBO, the rule against recapture is designed to prevent a patentee from concealing a rejection. NBO teaches that when you look for an abandoned subject matter, you look beyond the immediate patent from which the reissued claims emerge. After a rejection or a surrender of claim scope, some applicants prior to NBO would abandon or cancel the claims and then file for new applications to obtain a patent with narrower claims and follow that with a reissued patent that would seek to recapture subject matter that was not shown in the patent from which the reissued claims emerge.
Why don't you have a problem with recapture based on the prosecution of the 585 patent itself?
We don't, Your Honor, because the TEOS reactant was never relied upon as presenting novel properties to the structure of the device.
Well, that doesn't seem to me perhaps to be an accurate reading of the prosecution, because there are lots of sentences in there in which there was a suggestion that this is distinguishable over the thermally applied oxide because of the method of application using TEOS.
Well, the method of application is, of course, low-pressure chemical vapor deposition, and that was relied upon as significant. That limitation was not removed in the reissuance. The distinction is that you...
Well, I think it's actually both were referred to. Was that? I mean, that seems to me pretty clear from the legislative history, I mean, from the prosecution history, that they... referred to the Owen Declaration and the physical difference between a layer of thermally grown oxide and a layer of TEOS deposited oxide formed in the manner as claimed in Claim 13. That's at 630-631 of the appendix.
Yes, Your Honor, but I think what this Court's opinions in recapture cases teach, in particular, for example, King versus Conagra Foods, is that you must look further and see whether that was actually relied upon, what happened to that. And in this case, those amendments, and the amendment in fact to 2013 that added the TEOS limitation, was deemed by the examiner to be moot. In fact, he said, it doesn't matter whether you are claiming a novel process. In a product-by-process claim, we're looking at the device.
Yeah, what are you referring to when you say the examiner considered it moot?
I'm referring to the appendix at pages 622 and 623. And I quote, the examiner says, an old product produced by a new method is not patentable as a product. And he goes on to say, the matter given weight in claims drawn to structure having a process of making segments are those present in the final product. And so, in order to determine, and one thing is important here, is
that after that rejection, the applicant continued to argue that he was wrong and that they weren't structurally the same, and that hence the claim should be allowed, which had the TEOS oxide layer in it.
And one thing that's very important to keep in mind here is that the applicant never claimed that the use of the TEOS reactant imparted novel physical characteristics.
Well, you say that, but that's not how I read the prosecution history.
Well,
there are statements. One of them is what I read to you earlier.
For example, claims 13 and 14 were actually never rejected based upon PEEK. Only a different claim was rejected based upon PEEK. So there was no recapture of subject matter that was relinquished in order to overcome a rejection on PEEK, because PEEK was never used by the examiner to reject claims 13 and 14. So if there is never part that's overcome by an argument, then you're not recapturing anything because it was never relinquished.
But there was a rejection on a different claim, an amendment made to insert the TEOS limitation in that claim too, and the arguments were made to overcome that rejection. Those arguments apply with respect to the limitation that appears in other claims as well?
No, Your Honor, because as the court said in Kim versus Conagra, you have to look as to whether or not that amendment was patentably significant. And in this case, it was not, because other claims at the time actually included the TEOS limitation. So the rejection was not, the TEOS limitation was not added, for example, to claim 13 to overcome a rejection by adding the TEOS limitation. The rejection stood with claims that already had the TEOS limitation in it. Rather, the arguments that were made and the arguments that ultimately prevailed at the board was that the device that was created by the process of depositing the tunneling oxide. See, what was novel in this case is that
I'm confused. You had two claims, 13 and 14. One of them started out with the TEOS limitation. The other one was amended to add the TEOS limitation.
That's correct.
So are you saying that if you started out with a limitation and argued that that created a patently distinct invention, that that wouldn't invoke a recapture rule?
What I'm saying was,
are you arguing that? Are you saying because the TEOS limitation was in there from the beginning that you can't have a surrender?
I'm not saying that, as the court said it, because I'm saying what you have to look to is what did the Patent Office do in response to the amendment. I think the amendment illustrates the fact that the attorney did not appreciate the full scope of the claim, because he added a TEOS limitation to claim 13, and then following his addition of that limitation, the examiner says, look, that doesn't have anything to do with patentability. That was the response of the office, was to say that the addition of TEOS, that may be a novel process, but it doesn't affect your patentability of the device claims.
So if the applicant argues this makes it patently distinct, this is what's important, this is why you added the limitation, you're saying unless the examiner agrees with the applicant in that respect, there's no surrender?
Well, in this case, Your Honor, the applicant said,
well, what's the answer to my question?
I would say the answer to your question is, as in Kim versus Conagra Foods, if in fact that amendment was not patentably significant, then it cannot form the basis for a recapture argument.
You know, but Kim is a different case. You're arguing the case you wish you had rather than the one you do. So the problem is we have to deal with the prosecution history in the case that's before us. And you've made arguments throughout, it seems to me, both before the examiner and before the board, asserting some patentable significance of the TEOS limitation.
Well,
the examiner may not have agreed with that, but that was the argument pressed. And it seems to me that triggers the recapture rule directly without getting into the question of whether the surrender in the parent had any effect.
Well, the opinion in Kim, however, says that, if I may quote, while the fossil
blades,
I am reading from page 1323, bottom of the page. While the phosphate limitation was added at the same time, the prosecution history does not indicate that Kim added that limitation in particular in order to overcome the obviousness rejection. Significantly, the examiner had previously rejected claims of the original application that included phosphate, and noted that the phosphate salt limitation there was not patentably significant. That's extremely analogous. In fact,
it's not analogous. If the thing was added here to create a patentable distinction, and that was what was argued to the examiner, that wasn't the case in Kim, right?
Well, here, for example, in Kim,
device claim. You're claiming a product. And the whole reason we have product by process claiming is because you can't describe the unique structural characteristics of the state.
So what do you understand the examiner or the board to have done here when it eventually allowed the claims?
The examiner did eventually allow the claims.
No, that is the board.
For the board. The board found that there must have been some unique characteristics as a result of the process. Now, I use process broadly because that's what the board said. But that process, in fact, the particular steps that were most relied upon was the low pressure chemical vapor deposition.
That's what you say, but you argued the TS limitation also.
You know, we did not ever argue that TEOS imparted unique structural characteristics.
I read the prosecution history differently. That I read the prosecution. If you argued TEOS, then the district court was correct here, right?
You know, Your Honor, the district court, we believe, was wrong for several reasons. For one, the district court said that we traversed the restriction requirement. That is clearly erroneous. The district court actually was of the opinion that the two inventions were not patentably distinct. And I think that was part of the error of the district court.
Well, we've been discussing the effect of the prosecution history of the 584-585 patent and not the, the question of the restriction and the effect, if any, of the prosecution of the parent.
And I think the reason why the error of the district court is that the district court did rely heavily on the prosecution of the earlier 7-4 patent and found that the High Court does not contest that it added a TEOS limitation specifically to the process.
Well, since suppose the district court erroneously relied on the history of the process patent, what difference does that make? We're talking about summary judgment.
Because the district court then carried that into the dismissal.
Yeah, there was de novo review. Doesn't make any difference what the district court said about it.
Well, I think it does in the sense that the errors of the district court resulted and could be explained by misapprehension.
Are you arguing that what you did in the 774 prosecution isn't relevant to the prosecution of the process by product by process claim?
That you were arguing that certainly because it's part of the family, of the patent family, it should be reviewed, but ultimately it ends up not being relevant because there's no subject matter that was claimed in the product claims that was ever surrendered in the process claims.
You're well into your rebuttal. Would you like to reserve?
Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay, let's hear from the other side. Ms. Carruthers, good morning.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Jodell Carruthers and I represent FST. I'd like to start off by pointing out that Danaher repeatedly surrendered the use of non-TEOS reactants while prosecuting the patents in this family, including with its amendments and arguments in prosecuting the 585 patent, which is what led directly to the reissue claims. It also surrendered it, as it admits, in the 774 patent.
And does that matter? Because what they did in the 774, which was a method patent, does that carry over in some magical way to the 585?
Well, Your Honor, maybe it doesn't always. In this case, it should. As you pointed out, let me answer your question first. Why? Because one of the first things that the patentee did when prosecuting the 774 was in this particular instance draw one-to-one correspondence between the process claims pre-TEOS and the product by process claim pre-TEOS. Specifically, that the patentee told the examiner the process as claimed cannot be used to make another and materially different product, nor can the product as claimed negated by another materially different process.
But the restriction requirement is directed to sort of a whole separate question of principally the convenience of the patent office in examining applications, and quite often examiners make restriction requirements. Quite often they're traversed. Quite often the examiner makes the restriction final, and then the parties go forward and proceed either filing a divisional or a continuation or whatever. That doesn't necessarily impart any significance other than the convenience of the office examining what the office perceives as distinctly different inventions for purposes of examination.
Understood, Your Honor. We agree that it's an administrative tool. Often when there's a different or a wider search for one part of the claims than there is for another side of the claims. And here in MDO, this court specifically said it's important to look at the entire file history, and based on what's said, you decide whether or not a surrender in one application applies to the other. Here we believe it should, so that as Your Honors were pointing out when the appellant was arguing, there were surrenders in the 585 as well. There were unquestionably surrenders. So there's numerous surrenders here where they gave up TIAS. You can affirm the district court's finding of invalidity based on any of them. For example, in the 585, they very specifically relied on the process limitation that involved TIAS to overcome prior art. They had to because the examiner had found the product in prior art, so they had to turn to the process limitations as imparting some sort of novel structure, and they relied on the same declarations of Mr. Owen, two of which they submitted in the 774, and a new declaration, a third one they submitted in the 585, to say that the tunneling layer, according to the present invention, is formed using the process steps, including independent claims herein, and it's not structurally the same as the tunneling oxide layers disclosed in the prior art.
For a product by process claim, what difference does it make what process is used in terms of prior art? The question is whether the prior art discloses the product, correct?
In looking at the prior art, it is whether or not the prior art discloses the product.
Regardless of how that prior art product might have been produced.
That's correct. But if you want to overcome the rejection as to that art, you then must rely on the process limitations. Once you rely upon the process limitations and limit them in order to overcome that prior art, you have made a surrender as to that limitation.
No. That general statement's not accurate. It would only be true if you could show that the process limitations imported a structural difference.
Fair enough, Your Honor. If you rely upon it to show that it imported a structural difference, then you have relied upon it to overcome that prior art. And when we go to recapture analysis focuses on the scope of the claim. And the scope of the claim here before reissue, Zycor only had the right to exclude competitors or the public from making a device using the process as claimed. Because to exclude someone from using it, they have to be using every limitation, including the process limitations. But after reissue, they've recaptured, or attempted to recapture, that exact scope that they gave up when they had to rely upon the TIAS limitation to overcome prior art, because after reissue, Zycor would be able to prevent someone from using any reactant, including non-TIAS reactants, to make the client's device. And that is what involves the recapture analysis. And to point out a few, I know we pointed them out in our briefs, but to point out a few specifics of where they specifically relied on TIAS to overcome the prior art and relied upon that process limitation, they specifically pointed out in the appendix 661 that forming the TIAS tunneling layers in the manner claimed increases the total charge which can be conducted through the dielectric layer by an order of magnitude. They also claimed that this structure differed from prior art because this TLS deposited layer coats all the surfaces and thus fills in pinhole defects, providing a less effective result. And there's no doubt they relied upon the TLS limitation when they argued against the Peak reference as well. The Peak reference had specifically talked about three different ways of forming a silicon dioxide layer. It talked about using HTO in a deposited manner, LPCVD using a chemical use with HTO deposition, also talked about LPCVD with TLS, and it talked about a thermal technique. But Peak found that using TLS had the worst performance for an oxide layer. So in prosecuting the 585 and including in front of the Board of Patent Appeals, Dover seems on that finding to argue that he taught away from using TLS and using the Owen Declaration said that one skilled in the art would not have been motivated to use TLS, and that the successful use of TLS as an oxide source in the doubly chromed tunneling layer was a surprising and unexpected result. And because it was surprising and unexpected, the claims were not obvious in light of the prior art. By doing so, when you apply the standard three-step test for recapture analysis that this court has always applied, and here, as I've already conceived, that steps one and three are met, we apply step two, the test for surrender is the objective observer test. Would an objective observer conclude that they had made amendments and arguments to overcome prior art in order to gain allowance of the claims? That's exactly what they did here.
Does it matter whether those arguments were successful or not?
No, because the public is on notice, and the recapture doctrine is about rationale behind it, or at least one of the rationales behind it, is that it's a public reliance standard. And when we've made these statements to the patent office and the board to prosecute these patents, the public is entitled to rely, and an objective observer would conclude that these arguments were made to gain allowance. And Zyper makes an argument that
in a situation where, for example, a board might say, we're not convinced by those arguments, but here's another reason for the allowance. I know that didn't happen here. The board's decision is somewhat ambiguous as to what it's saying, but suppose the board explicitly said, well, we don't find that convincing, we're not going to rely on that, we're going to rely on something else.
One of the things that this court said in NBO was that when a patentee's argument emphasized one feature, it cannot cure a surrender as to other features. So the actions of the patentee here, I believe, are what really matter. Now, as you said, that decision as to how far it goes does not have to apply to be decided today because those aren't the facts in front of you. But in NBO it was discussed, and I think you would also find that in PANU, the applicant had raised six different arguments to gain allowance, but recapture was found because they had tried to recapture one of them. Now, as to the next question, which maybe more directly answered your question, which was, so what if it didn't work? I do believe what they said and what the public observes was more important than whether they were successful.
Well, in other words, you're saying how the PTO responded to that argument is not the test.
No, I do not believe that is the test. And we've seen in particular in other contexts, such as the similar context of prosecution history estoppel, this court has said before that it doesn't matter whether or not the examiner was persuaded by the argument. What matters is that it's in the public record. What I was going to point out was Zyper tries to argue that they used the term TLS oxide or TLS tunneling layer as a shorthand for any reactant. That argument is belied by their own arguments in response to Peak, which talked about more than one reactant. So they clearly were distinguishing an Owen Declaration and argument. They meant TLS when they said TLS. And I believe that that is is fairly clear. The other thing I would point out is that this is just not error as contemplated by the reissue statute. The patentee clearly knew, just as the court found in MBO, the patentee clearly knew how to claim with TIOS, without TIOS. We saw that originally in the 774 application, which for the reasons that are brief, we believe also applies. Original, when they first filed the application, Claim 1 was broad. It did not limit to Claim 2, to TIOS. Claim 2 was narrower. It depended on Claim 1 and limited it to TIOS. We see the same thing in the 585. When they originally submitted what at that time was numbered Claim 13, they took it from the original application that led to the 774 and offered Claim 13 that did not have TIOS. But at the same time, in a preliminary amendment that was submitted contemporaneously, they submitted Claims 14 through 20 and they drafted all those to include TIOS. So the same thing happened with those applications. They added TIOS to limitations where it wasn't already there and then relied upon it for either amendment or argument to overcome the prior art. And that is why recapture must prevent the validity of these two claims, 13, Rule 12 and 13, as they issued in the 370 reissue. This clearly demonstrates this is not the type of error that was contemplated that could be corrected by the reissue statute. And therefore we ask that this court affirm the district court's finding. If it reaches the merits of this decision, we'll see it on our briefs as to the motion to dismiss. But an objective observer would conclude that the non-TIOS reactants were surrendered to overcome prior art, that reissue claims attempt to recapture that exact same subject matter as the same limitation, and therefore we believe this court should affirm the invalidity of claims 12 and 13. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. I think what's important to keep in mind here is the standard and the burden of proof. Now, the appellee relies extensively on the reasonable observer standard and the objective observer and suggests that that somehow lowers the standard. The standard is that the party challenging the patent must show that the captured subject matter by clear and convincing evidence. The court said that in Kim versus ConAgra Foods and actually cited to the I4I Supreme Court opinion to support that. Now, the argument was made below that the clear and convincing standard didn't apply to recapture, that it was a lower standard. And you could look just for substantial evidence of what the objective observer might view. And this is where it comes into play because of the ambiguity of what happened at the board. In the arguments that were made to the board, TIOS was never singled out as imparting unique characteristics. In fact, you can read through the arguments at pages 659 and 660 and before that. And in each case, what's referenced is the process and the overall process. In fact, the Peak reference actually distinguishes from this case. Sorry, may I finish this sentence? Yes, please. In that, Peak showed that TIOS did not improve the dielectric layer. And the point is that demonstrated that TIOS wasn't contributing to the strength of the device. It wasn't the TIOS that was doing the trick. It was something else. And never was TIOS relied upon as the